Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
Okay, welcome back. Just waiting for our first item to come in there. Owen, you might advise me on what's happening there, please, in regards to that. But we'll have a look at some of the early messages coming in. Person asked the Taoiseach, or the Taoiseach rather, what he's going to do this time for the crime he has already admitted to doing. The Taoiseach hasn't admitted to any crime. And we need to be very, very clear on that now. Now, that's people to please be careful of your language when you're putting, and your terminology, when you're putting stuff onto WhatsApp or texts or whatever else. Because remember, you can be open to legal liability. So, the Taoiseach hasn't admitted to any crime. You're referring to the Taoiseach passing on a copy of the agreement that had been reached with the Irish Medical Organisation. Pardon me? Taoiseach, I keep saying the Taoiseach, okay, right, he will be Taoiseach again anyway, next year if things go right, thanks lads. You're referring to the medical report of the contract, draft contract that he passed on to Matthew O'Toole of the rival doctors' organisation. Gardaí are investigating that. There is no actual status yet in that case that any crime was committed. So let's be careful, please, because sending me in and then eating me because I didn't read your email, you'll have to understand that I have to observe legal probity here at this end. And another listener says, travellers are always looking for equal rights. So why are they not punished the same way as everybody else, not just COVID-related? A lot of other things, they seem to be able to do what they like. The guards and justice system seem to treat them differently. Well, again, we want to be clear here. This is an element among the traveller community, just like we have an element among the settled community, which are very adept at breaking laws. Have you heard about gangland or whatever else? Owen, what's the story there, please, in relation to our opening item? Right, okay, because I'm waiting for that for the last couple of minutes to come in. So, in terms of what else have we got on the whatever, right, Owen has given me the signal now, so we can proceed in relation to that. Thank you, lads. 3 out of 10 primary school principals and deputy principals say they're working more than 50 hours a week and many may be experiencing severe stress. That is indeed according to a new report which is just issued. It's called Wellbeing in Post-COVID Schools, Primary School Leaders, Reimagining of the Future. And the co-authors of that are Yolanta Burke and Magella Dempsey. Dr. Yolanta Burke is a chartered psychologist and assistant professor at Maynooth University's Department of Education, and she's on the line. Good morning, Yolanta.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
You're very welcome again.
Oh, it's lovely to be on your show.
you're very, very, very welcome indeed. 2 out of 10 principals are found to be experiencing symptoms of severe stress. I suppose that's no different to any leader in any particular company or community at the moment.
Well, definitely we are all much more stressed now than we have been before COVID, before the COVID began. But it is quite a lot of stress that they experience. To be honest, I have carried out research previously with other groups and I have never seen the statistics to be as severe as this. So when leaders were asked how many of them have experienced a lot of stress this in this school year, 80% of them said that they've experienced a lot of stress. Usually it's about 30%, or pre-pandemic it was about 30%. Even during the pandemic, when there was research carried out with people experiencing stress, it was not as severe as in this group. So they do experience a lot of stress at the moment, maybe even more than others.
You surveyed 861 primary school leaders, as they're called, in the survey. 7 out of 10 were in the role over 4 years. 8 out of 10 reported their enrolment to be stable. And that's, of course, one of the pressures on principals, is having enough students for the next school year so that they can keep the numbers of teaching cohorts. 96% of school leavers worked over 36 hours, and 3 out of 10 working over 50 hours a week. But there'd be people out there, Yolanta, saying, what? 96% of them work 36 hours, and then just 30% are working over 50 hours a week. many people would be saying, but sure, the vast majority of leaders work far in excess of that.
Well, every leader definitely works, leaders definitely work a little bit longer hours. But I think that the more important issue here is that the amount of stress. And what the report has also shown that is that while their depression levels are more or less the same as the general public, their well-being is lower, and it's definitely lower when we compare it them to the post-primary school leaders, and just showing the complexity of the role, the pressures that the additional pressures that they are under, even in comparison to the post-primary school leaders that are receiving much more support.
Well, I know that primary schools are often far less resourced than secondary schools, and I think I'm sure you can make the division between rural primary schools as opposed to urban schools, and rural schools in particular, where principals might be teaching as well as trying to carry out their administrative jobs. That can be a key aspect of pressure. On that point, actually, what were the principals and deputy principals identifying as their main sources of stress?
They are going through a lot of additional tasks that they have to complete relating to COVID. So in addition to the usual stressors that they've experienced, they've also had COVID-related HR issues. Many teachers had to be replaced by substitute teachers, and finding substitute teachers was very challenging for them. They also include things like implementing COVID safety guidelines, which were extensive, classroom cleaning, again, massive additional tasks that was added to everybody, to teachers, to leaders. But as you said, in smaller schools, leaders were doing a lot of it as well. And any kind of additional procurement, purchasing the PPE equipment, there are additional stressors that are affecting leaders, even though the roles are already very complex.
Many of these stresses are within the control of the person themselves, some would say. I've been reading through your report, and I noticed, for example, that a quarter of the leaders have never taken the sus biog. Now, the sus biog, for those out there, is the break at 11 o'clock or half 10, and it's called in schools, particularly primary schools, they call it the sus biog, as distinct from the sus mór, which is am loan or lunchtime. And 3 out of 10 take it regularly, but a quarter of the leaders never take their morning break, with half of the leaders taking their lunch rarely or never. Now, that's never advisable, even on the most basic, fundamental human individual level.
You know, but the interesting thing is that past research is showing us that very often we take these short breaks as a reward for completing a task. And I'd say because of the busyness of schools, leaders just, they maybe don't feel that they need to be rewarded because there's so much more left to do. But there is a huge amount of research showing us that not taking breaks is detrimental to our health. So firstly, it's bad for us for the afternoon. So if we don't take that little break, we're talking here about less than 10 minutes. If we don't take this break in the morning, in the afternoon, we will all feel a little bit more irritable. We may feel not as engaged with work. But more importantly, the overall well-being is reduced when people don't take their proper regular breaks. So it is not even for leaders, it's for everybody. It's so important, especially now when we are under so much additional pressure associated with COVID, that we take these breaks.
And I think one of the findings in your report, which will be of huge concern, and not just to the teaching fraternity, but to every parent who's sending children to schools, to primary schools, not one leader out of the 861 primary school leaders that you surveyed, not one was flourishing psychologically.
Yes, that really saddens me very much, I have to say, because similar research was carried out in many European countries and with thousands of participants, and despite the pandemic, there were there was still a percentage of participants that were flourishing. And we're talking here about 15, 17% were still flourishing. Whereas in our sample, not one of them was flourishing. That really made me very sad, because it just shows you how much pressure they were under. I think that they've been firefighting so much. And last summer was a write-off in a way, because everybody was preparing for school reopening. So I think it's just the constant relentless challenges that they have been experiencing maybe are affecting them, affecting their well-being. But the worst part is that research is showing us that when people's well-being goes down to moderate levels, which is the case with the vast majority of our leaders, it may result in depression 2 years from now if it is not sorted out. So there is still time. We still can do something about it, but we need to do it fast to help leaders, be it by centralizing some of the tasks, helping them out, maybe even providing them with additional mental health support. But something definitely has to be done, because these leaders are looking after our children, and we need to make sure that they're well.
2 out of 10 leaders showing high level of resilience, but that leaves 8 who are not dealing with that stress in a comprehensive or a proactive way. Finally, in your report, you issue various recommendations, and you've talked about some of them there. But it seems to me, listening to you, we need a multifaceted approach here. It's not just a simple thing of, you know, taking your susbyug or your lunch. We have to look at the bigger picture. What kind of resources, both financial and human, are available to principals when they have to make these changes, when staff go sick, when they have to make the changes according to the COVID? I've interviewed principals here across the past year at primary and secondary level about the demands being made on them. How are we going to cope with these students when they come in? We're dealing with large numbers of children. How will we get them to observe COVID, all of that? It's one thing to be dealing with a cohort of adults, but very, very stressful when you're dealing with a cohort of children. And by extension, your accountability and responsibility to those children on behalf of parents.
Beautifully put, beautifully put. Absolutely, completely agree with you. And I think that there is this whole school approach that's necessary, that would include, because we're focusing our attention very much on children, which is understandable, and we need to continue with this. But we also need to focus the attention on the teachers, on the principals, and also on parents, because they need to understand, they need to become part of the community and need to help out and also be helped in some ways as well.
Well, it's from the Education Department at Maynooth University. It's called Wellbeing in Post-COVID Schools, Primary School Leaders Reimagining of the Future. The findings are extremely significant and are of concern not just to teachers, but to every parent out there who wants those who are in charge of educating their children to be in a good place psychologically and professionally. That is the nature of this report. The co-authors are Margella Dempsey of the Education Department, who's Associate Professor at Maynooth University's Department of Education, where she lectures on curriculum studies and other related issues. And our guest speaker this morning is Dr. Yolanta Burke, PhD, Chartered Psychologist specialising in positive psychology applied in education. And she's Professor, Assistant Professor and Researcher at Maynooth University's Department of Education, where she's also Programme Leader of the Master's Degree in Educational Leadership and Management. God almighty, Yolanta. You have an awful lot on your menu there.
I know, it's very enjoyable though.
Yeah, and you sound like you're really enjoying it. And listen, lovely to have you on the programme.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed chatting to you always.
As ever, and likewise. Thank you indeed. Dr. Yolanta Burke with that story. Very, very important. Well done all round.
Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
Okay, taking a little extended break because the Taoiseach is slightly delayed at the moment, so we'll see about filling the gap here. Hi, Paul Reedy here from Selbridge. Paul is living in Alvar in Portugal. He was on earlier this morning, I think, answering the quiz on the breakfast show with Dara O'Dea. I have to say, I was in Alvar once, liked it very much. Paul is obviously living there, enjoying the sunshine. We're not doing too bad, I suppose, ourselves today from that particular point of view. Also, is the schedule for vaccination always as chaotic as Wednesday, yesterday, the 5th of May? My appointment for vaccination was at 10 to 4. I registered at 10 past 5. Waiting so long is hard. There seems to be a need for better organisation, but then why would it be surprising with the HSE responsible, says Anne Williams, who wasn't too happy at waiting over an hour to get to register for her vaccine yesterday at Punchestown Vaccination Centre. But hey, Anne, you know, in fairness, getting the vaccination was the important thing for you. By the way, just to announce regarding Tom Hickey's death, the late actor, well known as Benji, but a very accomplished actor right across the whole theatre spectrum. And we had that wonderful interview with Kildare footballing legend, former Garda superintendent Mick Carolan during the week. Kildare County Council has announced that at the request of the Cathaoirleach of Kildare County Council, Councillor Mark Stafford, an online book of condolence for the late Tom Hickey will be available on Kildare County Council, is available at present on Kildare County Council's website until Tuesday next, the 11th of May. If you'd like to get on, go on to the website is kildare.ie/County Council. kildare.ie/.ie. We mentioned that our outside broadcast unit makes its comeback today with Pat Costello. God, it's been parked outside for months. I had to keep going out every week turning it on to make sure it was still ready for action. And we're heading down to Craddock House Nursing Home in Naas today to mark Alzheimer's Tea Day. The theme of the day is tea in every town. Please join us for a cup of tea to remember. And Pat will be speaking to manager Mary Darker and playing requests for the various residents and by the residents all between 11 and about 12:30 this morning. They're having a coffee morning down there, or tea morning, between 11 and 12. So if you have people you know in Craddock House, send the requests in by text or WhatsApp only after 11 o'clock. Don't send them in beforehand because they'll get lost. You can text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97, or you can email studio@kfmradio.com. Yes, am I waffling? I am. Because we're filling that particular issue, waiting for the tonnage. We were told the tonnage would be available at 9:40. Then we just got a call a short time ago saying he's delayed for 5 minutes, so we're well waiting. Tom listened to our repeat programme last night, he says, and it was really a very good programme, particularly the PD4A interview. Thanks for that, Tom. And Mary says, how can the vulture funds buy all the houses and rent them and not pay tax? Very simple, Mary, because they were allowed to do that by Michael Noonan when the housing market was on the floor. About a decade or so ago, it was a way of getting money into the market, keeping construction industry going and houses available. But unfortunately, that's why. But it's not very, very satisfactory now. KFM, WhatsApp messages now. We're missing our pet dog. She's called Snowbell. She's brown and white, a miniature terrier. She's missing in Ballyteague, and our daughter is heartbroken. Right, anybody, we don't normally do dogs, but a miniature terrier in Ballyteague, we don't want a little girl being heartbroken altogether. Shannon says, ask the Tánaiste om will an roitis conténu a hógáil go próinach. Is the statement about building new houses, is it urgent? We'll ask him a lot more if we can ever get him to join us. And finally for the moment, and I think I'm going to play a song after this. Morning, Clem, about the Travellers. So does that mean, Clem, that when we, the settled law-abiding people, can ask the Garda to look over us while we have a big knees up in our garden and do nothing to stop it? It's an absolute disgrace what they're getting away with. Look at what happened to the former staff of Debenhams. While they were standing up for their rights, they were dragged out of their protest. Indeed, you're dead right now. I can't disagree with what you're saying in regards to this. They were carried out physically by Gardaí, literally lifted off the ground. One Gardaí holding around the shoulders, another Gardaí hold by the legs. The workers were removed in Dublin. And the first words you will get from Martin Collins at Pavey Point is, this shouldn't have happened. He should have been there with the Gardaí to solve the matter, thanks to him. Well, he was in Dublin. He can't be up in Longford. But I'd ask the question again. There was a court injunction against these people. Right? That cost a lot of money to get. A couple of thousand euro at least. On top of that then, armed Gardaí were at the scene. I presume Gardaí from the various divisions were there. And yet, these people defied all of that and went to the and carried on overnight with their celebration. Owen, what are you telling me?
Yeah, I've just got through to the Taoiseach's office there, and we've been asked to give a call back in 5 minutes to speak to
No, cancel it. No.
Okay.
5 minutes is 9:52. We're 5 or 6 minutes up to news at that stage. Listen, this programme, I'm sure I respect the Taoiseach's schedule and that, but bringing that up to 9:52 or 53, if we're lucky, nearly at 5 to 10, will only give me enough time to say, how are you, Taoiseach? How's it going? Have a good day. Goodbye. Where we have news a couple of minutes later, and we already have scheduled interviews. We're live from the Garda's mobility launch over at Tokers, and I have to respect our other guests, that they're not all thrown out of place. As much as I'd love to talk to the Taoiseach, but maybe the Taoiseach will show us a bit of respect now and agree to chat to us tomorrow at 9:25. But that's too late at the moment. So unless the Taoiseach is available literally in the next minute or two, we're not going to do it. Do you know what I think I need, lads? I think I need a bit of meditation. Sit down there, everyone. Relax. Let's try this with me, OK? Now I'm stressed. We got to breathe. Sit down, everybody. Let's try this.
Mindfulness of breath. 3-minute breathing exercise. To prepare for this exercise, just take a few moments, whether you're sitting or standing, just to find a comfortable position. You may choose to close your eyes or keep them open. If you're feeling a bit tired, it may be useful to let just a little bit of light in to keep you alert. Begin by gently moving your attention onto the process of breathing, simply observing each breath as it happens, whether you focus on the rise and fall of your chest or abdomen, or perhaps the sensation of the breath as it moves in and out of the nostrils. Are the breaths deep or shallow, long or short? Really feel what it is like to breathe, without feeling the need to alter your breath, just observing it as it happens. As you engage with this exercise, you may find that your mind wanders, caught by thoughts or by noises around the room or bodily sensations. When you notice that this happens, know that this is okay and that our mind often wanders. Simply notice what has caught your mind's attention, then gently bring your focus back to the breath. You may find as you watch your breath that it begins to change or stays at a steady pace. Whatever your breath is doing, just watch it in this moment and feel what it's like to be breathing. Again, if your mind wanders, it may do so many times. As you notice that your focus has moved from breathing, you may wish to simply label the distraction as thinking or as a feeling or as sensations or noise. Then just gently bring your attention back onto the process of breathing. As we move towards the end of this short exercise, I invite you to allow yourself to be really aware of your next few breaths, focusing on every sensation as the breath comes in and as it flows out. take a few moments to yourself just to feel really connected with the present moment. Now, as you feel comfortable to do so, you can expand your awareness from the breath into the rest of your body and the room around you. And when you feel ready to do so, you can open your eyes and bring the exercise to a close.
Ding-a-ling, we're back. We're relaxed now. But seriously, I mean, I would have spent a considerable time last night researching the various topics today to have the interview ready for the programme. I mean, considerable pages and pages of preparation. We did advise Fine Gael of the topics that we were covering. You know, in fairness, to give the Tánaiste a chance. We didn't supply questions now, just the overall topics, the way it was going. We indicated and agreed a time that the interview would start at 9:40, and then in succession, it got pushed 5 minutes, 5 minutes, 5 minutes. I asked the question: Would that happen if it was RTE? I know the Tánaiste has a very busy schedule, but so have we. And out of regards to all their guests, I'm not going to start gazumping and jumping all of them off the schedule this morning, because we have live elements of the programme planned as well that we need to go to. So that's all we can say. And we have extended an invitation to the Tánaiste to join us tomorrow morning at 9:25, or at worst, Owen, if you can hear me out there, at 10:10 as well, if 9:25 doesn't suit his schedule. But as I say, I wonder, would that happen if it was a national station? And I have a lot of time for the Tánaiste and all politicians, because I respect the fact that they put themselves out in the public domain and they take a lot of flack. That's not to say that I agree with any of them or their policies or whatever. But anyway, Owen, on a little maybe bit more of positive news, I see a report just breaking that Lidl are to begin selling a range of COVID-19 antigen tests.
Yeah, supermarket chain Lidl to begin selling COVID-19 antigen tests in Ireland. The discount supermarket will begin selling packs of 5 test kits from tomorrow. The kits will cost $24.99. It'll be limited to 5 per customer. And a reminder, an antigen test uses a swab from your nose and it's quicker than a PCR test, but there are some limitations. According to the HSE, the test is not 100% accurate. The antigen test is less accurate than the COVID-19 PCR test, says the HSE. The test will find the virus in most people who have symptoms, but in some cases it may not pick up that you have the virus. Lidl, of course, has previously committed to offering its 6,000 employees on the island of Ireland a free weekly antigen test from the beginning of April. JP Scally is the CEO of Lidl Ireland and Northern Ireland. He said that the health and safety of staff and customers has been a priority since the pandemic began. He said it's our hope that by offering these tests they will add an extra level of reassurance to our customers as they follow that advice. So they go on sale tomorrow at $24.99.
You can be sure that Aldi and the other supermarkets will follow. Something I notice, Owen, that because we have obviously big demands here for the sanitisation fluids for yourselves, the 4 of us or 5 of us that are in here, Everybody else is at home, and the wipes, because we wipe down the station, all our equipment every day, sometimes twice a day, every aspect of the building. It's talking about pressure on school principals. I could write a book in it at this stage. But in regards to that, I have noticed that it's very difficult to get the bottles of sanitizer anymore in any of the supermarkets. None of them seem to be selling them.
Yeah, well, that and also the price of them. You know, if you can get them, the price of them have just
gone
up.
Well, it's a fiver for the 500ml bottle now, and you just don't see the tiny little bottles anymore that we used to get for about 90 cents, and they're selling about €2. But the 500ml bottles, the nice ones, as we'll call them, they were fully stocked on the shelves months ago. But you just can't seem to get them anymore. They might appear occasionally for one day or one weekend, and then they're gone again. But anyway, those antigen tests What do you do with that? You put the swab up your nose?
Yeah, swab up your nose, and they say it's quicker than a PCR test. I'm not sure if you have to get the swab then from the back of your throat.
And what do you do then after you take it out of your nose? Well, I'm sure you're not going to stick it into your throat then after that. But let's say you stick it up your nose, and what do you do with it after that?
I'm trying to see here.
You stick it into some kind of a meter reading, I think.
Yeah, and then
gizmo.
The results will show up and it'll identify whether or not you have the virus.
All right, well, let me tell you something about that. I had a colleague, not in here now, by the way, who on a Thursday evening showed me on Zoom, hey, look, in my company we've had a bit of a person has tested positive, so I've got this antigen test, right? Showed me it on Zoom, it's negative. That was on a Thursday evening after 6 o'clock. Went for a test on Friday morning to the COVID centre and was positive.
No way.
Yeah. So be careful with these antigen tests. They can give an indication, but they're not absolutely as accurate before you pay your 25, 55 or stuff like that. On the other thing, before we head off to news, by the way, outbreaks, according to The Independent, Eilish O'Regan and Stephen Maguire saying outbreaks of COVID-19 linked to international travel have made a comeback, highlighting the risk posed from people coming in from abroad. Figures show 2 flight-related outbreaks last week involving 5 to 7 people. In the period from April 20th to last Monday, travel-related cases of the virus rose to 214, lads, mainly due to tests on people coming here who have to enter mandatory quarantine. And, you know, there's still people out there who are saying we don't need quarantine. 214 travel related cases so far up to April 20th. Much regarding whether we'll have summer holidays or not, it depends on the European Union's digital green certificate that will allow EU citizens who have been vaccinated, tested negative or recovered from COVID-19 to travel more freely within the bloc. Well, I've got my first vaccination, but I'm told I have to wait 12 weeks until late July for the second one. So there'll be no summer holiday in that. There were 418 more cases yesterday, by the way, with nearly 3/4 of those among the 45-year-olds. So I think you should keep that in mind before you decide to wander. The number of COVID-19 patients in hospital fell to 137, which is the lowest for over 7 months. The cases yesterday, 167 in Dublin, Cork had 39, Donegal 32, and still high here in Kildare. We were the second highest yesterday, fourth highest today, 29 new cases in the county yesterday. Okay, to come up the next hour, we'll have a nice little bit of music for you, and then we're going live to Toker's Restaurant on the Newbridge Road out of Nace, where the Garda Síochána are holding the National